from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of November 2021, the beginning of National Farm City Week. We'll hear more about that in just a moment. Coming up today, we'll also talk about the commodity markets, that with Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And then a bit later in the program, we'll return to National Farm City Week, celebrating the connection between rural and urban areas of the nation. Today, we'll explore what University of Illinois Extension has been doing in the world of digital agriculture, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm out of the office this afternoon hosting the second day of the University of Illinois Extension Annual Conference, so no update of the commodity markets as it relates to price, other than during the midday, prices were higher for soybeans, corn, and wheat. Soybeans on some sales to China and corn on ideas that ethanol usage will continue to be very, very good. Now, last night, I called and talked to Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Here's that conversation. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for being with us.
Not a problem, Todd.
Let's talk a little bit about the marketplace, because you and I are talking early. We'll start with the support and resistance level. So this does not take in the overnight or the day trade for Wednesday, but through the close of the day. Tuesday, what did they look like?
Well, December has support at 541, resistance at 596. This is on corn, of course. March, 522 and 572. And May, 525 and 665. And you'll see that there's some similarities between the beans. When you look at January beans, 1172 and 1290. March beans, 1173 and 1289. And May beans, 1266 and 1375. So the May corn and the May beans are certainly leading the group in that respect. If you look at December gold, 1844 support, 1880 resistance, certainly has been on a rant. The Dow Jones, 35751 support, 39923 resistance. U.S. dollar index, 94.80 support, 97.40 resistance. Now, today we hit the highest that we've seen on the dollar in 17 months. Bitcoin, December, 56.031 for support and 69.50 for resistance. Managed money, Todd, has been kind of interesting. We went from 1,000 long on Chicago wheat last week to 29,000 this week. On corn, we are long 333,000 compared to 276 last week. Corn, 40,000 compared to 48,000 last week. Soy meal, short 14,000 compared to 26,000 last week. And soy oil, long 72,000 compared to 87,000. And I think when we get a little further into this, I'll hit on some of the reasons that I think that some of those changes are being made. Export inspections. Wheat exports running 14% behind compared to a year ago, which was 15% last week. 15.1 million bushels is what we need to get to the average. Corn, 18% behind compared to 21 last week, 50.7 million bushels. And soybeans, 28% behind compared to 31 last week, with a need for an average of 31.8 million bushels. Now, you know, we're seeing the peso down in Argentina continue to slide, so it's making corn and beans more valuable. Actually, one U.S. dollar right now is equivalent to 100 pesos in Argentina. And so this could lead to hoarding like I've seen in the past. You know, remember in the past when we talked about there were more Argentinians sleeping on U.S. dollars than they were sleeping on mattresses, or they were actually bartering, using corn and beans to buy inputs for their home. But the even worse situation for them would be higher export taxes. And I think that that's probably, with the particular administration they have right now, that's probably very realistic. And so this can certainly switch things quickly when it comes to export sales and export inspection.
It also tells us that the market and is just global, and it follows all kinds of trends from all across the planet. And I suspect you've been watching many, many things.
Oh, I'm always, you know me. I'm just a chronic reader is what I am when it comes to this kind of stuff. The market itself, you know, most people feel very confused by it a lot of times. But I think what you just said is so very true. It is a global market. Today, the Washington Post's Josh Rogan cited multiple U.S. administration officials saying Biden is going to announce a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics. Now, the one thing I don't understand from that statement is, does that mean the government people are not going and our athletes can still go? you know, you just really don't know because that's not clear. But they were saying coming off the respectful and candid Monday night virtual summit with China's Xi could prove a hugely symbolic affront and sure to evoke fury from Beijing. We do know that, Todd, there was no talk held between them on phase one, which ends on December 31st. And, you know, that certainly puts phase two into jeopardy. As we look at the bean market's been interesting. Shortages of lysine is what they use to pump up the protein in DDGs has moved the focus back to meal. And that's really been supporting part of the market. The Brazilian real, on the other side, is now $1 in the U.S. is equivalent to five and a half reals, and that's rallied from July, where it hit where it was at 4.94 to 5.68 until this recent pullback. So its high back in March was 5.87. And the point I want to make here is it explains why Brazilian farmers are selling on rallies, because they're getting some value back to their real. China plans on overhauling their seed rules to pave the way for GMO approvals. I thought this was pretty interesting. They're planning a regulatory overhaul for the seed industry. It's published on Friday, and they're going to have a public comment until December the 12th. We look at what's been rattling the corn market. Well, there's a little article. The wait may soon be over for the future of the renewable fuels. Everybody's been waiting for a decision from the Biden administration, and pro farmers Jim Wiesmeyer reported that the EPA Administrator Michael Regan said the blending requirements won't favor oil or agriculture. So those comments led to more chatter. And so nobody, you know, everybody is anxiously waiting to see what's going on.
I think Wiesmeyer went on to say that they, not only they wouldn't favor, but they wouldn't either. Neither one of them would like it. Or at least that's what he reported.
Yeah, that's right.
From Regan,
that's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly the truth, that neither one of them would like it. So, and then again, you know, we know that seldom do we like exactly what they do, but that's beside the point. This looks like it could be more serious. The wheat markets this week continue to climb. They put in a new contract high in December today in Chicago. So in addition to the Russian issues we've been discussing, this particular market is heavily overbought and being supported by the fact that the Canadian Railroad had to shut down the main route to the Port of Vancouver. They had really, really heavy rains, must have been really terrible. And that is Canada's largest port. So in 2020, they exported 35 million metric tons of crops. And unfortunately, some people fear that it won't be repaired until early of 22. So, I mean, they do have some other choices. It can be exported by the Great Lakes, but we all know they're shutting down for the winter. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this really comes about. And then when we look at the beef side of things, we've got the potential for a Cargill strike up in Canada. We've seen these beef prices. We all know we go to the grocery store. They've just been going up like crazy because of the supply lane trials, labor disputes, and all of that has an impact on the marketplace. And so they're saying that the Cargill workers in Alberta gave an official notice on Wednesday about striking December the 6th. They've been negotiating only for a couple of days, and some of them are refusing to work overtime. There's just so many things going on. So what they're calling this is meatflation, not inflation, meatflation. So the bad part is it forces the farmer to hold on to his stuff longer than he really should, so that increases costs. And a rib roast, they said right now, can set you back $100 in Canada, a rib roast. I mean, it's like, wow, pretty amazing. We also are seeing the bean market being supported by the crush. We had a really good crush, came in at 183.99, almost 184. That was not quite as high as last year, but definitely better than what the average estimates were. Oil stocks were just a little bit higher. And so another thing that I thought that was interesting and pushing the markets is we saw, well, they used to be Informa. They're now called IHS. They came out with their November acreage update. And they're basing it on the November winter wheat survey and their economic analysis of other crops. But they're still using the USDA September estimate, despite the fact that the November FSA data is saying that they think it's probably going to go higher. So U.S. corn acreage for 2022 projected at 90.8 million. That'd be 1.6 million below the October projection and 2.5 million below 2021. Beans, 87.9 million, which would be up 600,000 acres from their October and 700,000 above this year. Wheat acres, 49.4, 570,000 acres above their October, 2.7 million acres above this year's. And cotton acreage, 12.1, up 165,000 acres from the October projection and 903,000 above 2021. So, you know, the likelihood, at least what I take away from this, Todd, is that more than likely that when we finally get the final FSA numbers, and that'll be our January report, the final summary report, we're probably going to see some acreage increases on that side too. But I guess each day we'll take one day at a time.
Anything else that you've been following that we need to make sure we talk about? I know farmers have been really concerned about the price of fertilizer, and the pesticides availability for next year.
It's a hot topic everywhere, Todd. And I call this China Brazil chips continue to tumble. Brazil imports 76% of all the raw material that they need for fertilizer and pesticides, and of those, 32% come from China. So it's a tough situation. So what's happening is that China has made a change in its energy policy. You know, we talked about that last week. An important part of the chemical provinces the provinces that actually have chemical centers that produce products from yellow phosphorus no longer work the shifts they used to. China's trying to change its energy matrix, which is dependent on coal, and go to a more renewable one. So to meet this, they're increasing the price of electricity, and as a result, some factories are reducing production. In addition, the country, of course, continues to face the increase of the price of biogas. We talked about that last week. And they went through a period of drought that reduced the capacity of the hydroelectric plants, further limiting supply of energy and causing the Chinese industry to adopt rotations is what they're doing. So there's also other things a person has to look at, you know, and we're suffering it here, too. You know, that's just that. The pandemic and the social isolation, they slowed down industrial production. So the demand is there. They just can't get it to a sufficient level to meet what the market wants. And the same thing has happened in India. And so they're saying now that their coal stocks for electric generating plants are dangerously low and could result in up to 6 months of energy crisis. So with less pesticides and fertilizers, they are also adopting a protective practice. In other words, we want it for our domestic. I mean, we would do the same thing here. Russia's doing the same thing. They're a big supplier of phosphate to Brazil, and they're expecting that's going to be the same thing. Now add to that, not only the energy crisis, those inputs are finding a difficult way to reach where they want to go because of the scarcity of container ships. So if that isn't enough, you know, the lack of the transport is really tough. Now, it doesn't affect Asia, the United States, and Europe so much because the ship owners, those routes are more profitable, but it really affects Brazil. And they said in the same way the weighted ports has increased in a period that before was around 40 days can be up to 60 to 90 days without a defined period. So the thing that I want everybody to take away from this is you can't set back. We plant 6 months before Brazil does. Brazil still has fertilizer available. Okay. We just can't take a chance. So everybody's going to have to be very diligent. And Argentina, dry, dry and looking more dry.
I think we probably should wait on that one and take those dry conditions up when you join me for Commodity Week later this week. Thank you, Jackie, by the way, for joining me early. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing. I talked with her on Tuesday evening because during the day on Wednesday, I am helping to host the University of Illinois Extension Annual Conference. In today's agricultural news, the National Corn Growers Association says the Environmental Protection Agency did not use the best science in assessing glyphosate, atrazine, and simiazine. The agency recently released endangered species biological evaluations for the chemistries, and NCGA says those final assessments vastly inflate the number of species and habitats likely to be adversely affected. Last week's evaluation looked at the effects of the three chemistries when used at the highest legal limits rather than in levels typically used by farmers. By the way, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency assesses chemistries using a risk cup that takes all of the chemistries that could be used at full strength for as many times as they would be labeled for in any given season. Let's switch now agricultural organizations to the National Biodiesel Board, where the CEO, Donald Rehagen, submitted testimony to a House Ag Subcommittee hearing on the renewable economy in rural America. His testimony outlines the contribution of the clean fuels industry in terms of jobs and value-added markets for agricultural goods and environmental health benefits. Rehagen also says clean fuel contributes to the bioeconomy by reducing the impacts and cost of carbon and particulate emissions. And finally today, groups continue to react to President Biden's signing of the recently passed infrastructure bill. Brian Keel, Executive Director of Farmers for Free Trade, says it's an historic investment in America's agricultural infrastructure and that for too long we have seen our competitive advantage in infrastructure slip. Keel says Monday's signing marks a turning point. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. It's National Farm City Week from now through Thanksgiving. University of Illinois Extension is celebrating that link between rural and urban areas. And today we'll explore digital agriculture with Illinois Extension's Dennis Bowman. He's a digital agriculture specialist, and I asked him just what that title means.
Well, if you think about agriculture, it's been a history of adopting technology from its very beginning, from domestication of plants and animals, on through time to mechanization, advances in breeding and the adoption of fertilizer and pesticides. And so kind of the latest thing is looking at digital. And that's just using information in computers. And when you think about something like a digital picture, if you've got a digital picture from your phone or from a drone or from wherever, there's a lot of information in there. And each little dot of that picture has information and has numbers associated with it. And by accessing those numbers individually, we can actually start to do things with it and manipulate it using some of the power we have in computing. And so, say, with a drone digital image, from one of the drones that I use, each picture, each dot on that picture has six different readings on the energy that's coming off of that spot, red, green, and blue, so we can make an image that looks good to our eye, and so it matches what we think we see when we're looking at a field, but also things like energy in the different spectrums of near-infrared and red edge and thermal infrared, as well as the whole image has its GPS coordinates tacked to it as well. So we have the location information. And so when we start getting information like this, adding that to the data that's coming out of our yield monitor from a combine, data that we're getting from soil test results that have the location in soil fertility readings, we can take these different pieces of digital data and start building files on a field that we can use the computer to analyze and help us do a better job of managing it.
Given all of that, what are some of the things that the University of Illinois is actually doing that are related to digital ag?
Well, people may not realize it, but at the University of Illinois, we have a Center for Digital Ag that has representation from the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, the Illinois Genomics Group, the College of ACES, and the College of Engineering, all working together on the area of digital ag. We've got some big grants, one of which is the AI Farms Project, and AI Farm stands for Artificial Intelligence for Future Ag Resilience Management and Sustainability, looking at a lot of different ways we can use artificial intelligence to help influence and improve the way we manage our farms. Another project is that we just got is the agrivoltaics, looking at trying to grow crops in and amongst solar panels so that as we see more farmland being taken up to produce energy with solar farms, can we keep that ground into some type of ag production as well as using it for energy production? And what's the optimum way we could blend those two things together? So there's a lot of stuff going on at the University of Illinois in this digital realm.
Are there off-farm benefits from digital ag?
A lot of folks would probably look at some of the things with the environmental quality, with air and water. The technologies that a lot of farmers use for variable rate applications that help put the right nutrient in the right place at the right time so that we aren't doing just a broadcast across the field of larger amounts of products. So targeting the use of our fertilizers and our pesticides, use of remote sensing that can help us pinpoint the areas where we need to go. And then food production and food safety. Just the ability, we've got a lot of people in the globe to feed, and anything we can do that can maintain the environment and increase our production are things that are good for everybody.
And finally, are there any concerns related to the use of digital or data agriculture?
Well, one of the biggest ones you often hear about is who owns the data. A lot of us have probably gotten those phone calls from third-party energy suppliers telling us that they want to help us lower our energy bill. And I always think that maybe they've got access to my energy data and know more about my utility bill than I do. And so the same could go on with agriculture as we build these data sets of information. And if somebody's computer is a little faster or more powerful, maybe they can get some insights about your production that you don't have. And then who owns that data, the potential use of it for regulatory situations. But we can also use that data to prove that we're doing a good job with farming as well. So that can be a two-edged sword there.
Dennis Bowman is a digital agriculture specialist for University of Illinois Extension. We're celebrating National Farm City Week, highlighting some of the ways Extension is woven into the social and educational fabric connecting the rural and urban areas of America. You've been listening to this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.